Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Hello and welcome to Minter Dialogue episode number 79. This interview, recorded on October 21st, 2013, is with Richard Lucas and Ian Patterson, respectively Managing Director and Project Director at Discerning Digital, based in the UK. In this conversation, we discuss their experience in making the digital transformation at the Guardian Media Radio Group and what are the key learnings for companies today faced with the same shift. We also look at managing digital risk and infrastructure needs to support the digital transformation. Hope you'll enjoy the show. Welcome to the Minter Dialogue Internet Show, where we discuss brand marketing with a focus on all things digital. I am Minter Dial, author of themindset.com, that's T-H-E-M-Y-N-D-S-E-T, where branding gets personal. You'll find the show notes on the blog for the upcoming interview. Let's cut to the quick. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the Minter Dialogue Internet Show, as we like to say. So, as Mitch Joel always says, tell us who you are and what you do.
Hello. We are Discerning Digital. There are two of us on this call. My name is Richard Lucas. I'm the MD.
My name's Ian Patterson. I'm the Projects Director.
Brilliant. And so tell us about Discerning Digital and how it came about.
Okay. Discerning Digital, I would sum us up as a digital consultancy that primarily deals in practical digital transformation. We're focused really on the SME and mid-sized businesses, and in short, we're here to help businesses get fit for their digital purpose. Really, I suppose, realizing their marketing goals is the outcome of that.
All right, so that's cool. And, of course, we spoke a little bit before the interview, but tell us about the origin of Discerning Digital and how it came to be formed.
Okay, well, it's really quite an interesting story from our point of view. It was born out of experience at the Guardian's GMG, that it's called, which is Guardian Media Groups, had a division, which is a radio division, made up of 13 radio stations. And I suppose the story was that at the time, I was brought in as head of digital. And the role really was to manage three different things that are happening at the same time. And I think that those could be, summed up in increased expectations from a board and the exec level for their digital aspirations, at the same time as having a really large increase of expectations from listeners. So the consumer side of a radio station was expecting us to deliver the experience outside of traditional analog radio. And then the third area of that was an increase as well from expectations from advertisers. So out of those three areas, there was a perfect storm, if you like, of increase in expectations from what digital can do for a radio group.
One of the things I particularly like about you guys and why we're on this call together is that you come from an operational background. And, as we see these companies, brands, trying to figure out the path through digital, you get a lot of consultants that come in that actually haven't had any real experience in operations to get through this malarkey. So they come out with lots of acronyms and weird ideas, but then they just don't fly because they're not actually experienced in the notion of true transformation and the hiccups and the heartaches and the real challenges that come about with change in the company.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I think that's one of the reasons why we really do pride ourselves on the practical side of transformation. Because we found that most boards and most people, senior teams in businesses, obviously understand the need to modernize and take advantage of digital channels for the bigger picture. But they also get a lot of noise from mainstream business press and news and the media about digital transformation. They've probably heard the phrase, but they don't really know how it can fit and gel and mold exactly for their configuration of business and the teams that they particularly have. So that's where we slot in, really, to help make sense of it all for particular organizations.
So I want to switch back to this notion of the increased expectations from the board, listeners, and advertisers, because from the board, well, that in any company, that's your basically the COMEX that says, you know, bloody hell, we need to have more dollars in this quarter. From the listeners, no, listen to me. Let me tell you. So there's a reversal. Yeah. And the advertisers, tell us about the pressure of the advertisers. And then really in the bigger picture, how were these expectations crisscrossed, paradoxical, or, you know, how did you manage them?
Well, we started off, it was an interesting one, you know, where do you start, which is the priority? I always felt that the priority had to be with the listener. The listener was driving change. What was interesting for me was that the audience that we were dealing with, the listeners, weren't your classic, what you would say, people that were driving change at the time. They were a really mainstream audience, but still they were absolutely expecting to have true dialogue with their favourite presenters rather than intermittent conversation via text and more of a monologue. So it was absolutely driven by listeners. So we just felt that if we could open up dialogue correctly and open up the channels, then everything else would follow through it. And then we called that really a kind of listener-led strategy. And then we've moved on into how advertisers could benefit from that.
What sort of pushback did you get from management? I mean, because their expectations were, you know, no, we need to have less costs, more money. I mean, I'm going to guess that kind of a dialogue.
Yeah.
How did that jive with the listener pressure?
Okay. Well, I mean, first of all, from the radio business is two sides to it. Obviously, there's an editorial side to it, which you'd call programming. And then there's a sales side of it, matching the two up. I felt that that there wasn't the same expectations from the people running the editorial side of it because, to be honest, at the time, they weren't necessarily having KPIs that were digital KPIs. They were really about analog KPIs, about how many listeners per week rather than which platforms they were on. So they never really took it as seriously as they ought to have done, perhaps, 2 years ago. A lot of our work there was working with the board to make sure that we had the right KPIs in place because digital listening and digital revenues obviously were a much smaller fraction than they were on the analog side. So it was trying to balance up the future of expectations and where the revenue is going to come from in the future and the listenership with the realities at the time.
Yeah, I'd just add to that as well. In terms of starting point, we really needed buy-in across the group. So we decided this was a big project we're about to embark on. We needed cohesion between lots of different teams. As Richard mentioned, there was commercial pressures, listening pressures, quite big personalities in radio, as I'm sure you can appreciate. In programming teams, you've got the jocks, presenters, all very opinionated. So we were getting questions thrown from all quarters. But what we needed to do was bring it all together. So in the early days, the very first thing that Rich and I did was talk about how we were going to deliver the project and get buy-in. So we decided to adopt an agile project methodology, which focused around bringing in stakeholders. So everybody felt that they had a part to play, although everybody had a defined remit to play. So people wore hats We had regular meetings. Everybody felt that they had input and everybody needed to sign off particular aspects of the project.
All right. So, I mean, just so I understand, you guys were on the digital side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're... Who was running this, and you know, under whose aegis was it being done, and what kinds of who exactly were the roles that were being brought in? I mean, CMO, CEO, yeah. Who? How's it going?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. This is why I would say that we almost stumbled on a transformational job here, not realizing that that was actually what was required 3 years ago. It is a good question. We were driving it through the digital team, but we reported into the board via the commercial director, and also it was very much driven from the CEO.
So you were reporting to the commercial director?
We were reporting to the commercial director in that business. The digital team reported through that, as did marketing. But actually, it was really being driven by the new CEO.
I see. And when you had these meetings, you had these projects, was it at the beginning you had a big kickoff meeting? And who was in that meeting?
Yeah,
we certainly did. We need to go right back to the very beginning. So imagine speaking to people who had never delivered a big project before in a large group. We needed to explain the context of how we were going to deliver the project, what the roles would be, how we would communicate, how we would maintain continual collaboration and dialogue, which is why Agile is such a fantastic tool in this kind of situation. And part of what we've actually carried through to our consultancy today is to work, to be honest, damn hard at humanizing technology. Mm-hmm. So there was never an aspect of the project that wasn't humanized and explained in plain English. So we always had a very brief summary, a paragraph that described every single aspect of the project that was being talked about today, no matter how technical it was.
I'd add to that as well. The actual people that were involved were representatives from marketing, from HR, from IT, from the editorial side of the business, and from sales.
PR as well, actually.
Yeah.
PR and com. Excellent. And what about the advertisers? We talked about the pressure from the board and the listeners. How did the advertisers swing in this trio?
Advertisers absolutely driving it, made from the national market, wanting to engage with their potential target audience, absolutely across mobile and social as well. So it was about offering a more rounded, holistic offering. To our advertisers, and they were absolutely driving it.
Did you get a feeling that they were also trying to grab the listeners? I mean, because in the end of the day, the ownership of media is quite useful for distribution, and so you have a platform, it's a radio, you blast out your message, and then that message is call to action, and that goes to their Facebook page. How did you interface with them with regard to sort of sharing that space, the earned space, maybe? Were there any conversations around participation with advertisers on your Facebook page and things like this?
It's quite a challenge to a certain extent, because from an editorial point of view, we absolutely wanted to have that conversation on the radio station's owned channels, mm-hmm. But it needed to be shared as well. So we would link to each other's and go about it from a very much a one-to-one case-by-case scenario.
It kind of depended on your relationship with the advertiser, I'm going to guess.
Yeah, and the trust involved, absolutely. Mm.
Yeah, we can give a practical example there, and this was something that I was really conscious of right from the very beginning, because we really were faced with... we didn't want to chuck the baby out with the bathwater. Everybody's familiar with that phrase. We wanted to consider what was good in the digital infrastructure, take the best of what we could. Now, that's across everything: people, teams, systems, processes, technology, best practice, all that kind of thing. So we needed to consider what was available. But one practical execution of how we worked with advertisers was on the site, really. We allowed them to have up to 90% of the retail space on the website. So that was allowing them to have all different kinds of configurations and options to effectively, we call them takeovers, take mm-hmm. over the radio station websites. Now we can give some examples and links of those.
Yeah, it'd be great. You just send me that afterwards and I'll put them up on the show notes.
Yeah.
So, Ian, you mentioned before Agile. Can you tell us about this? I mean, the other thing which I find fascinating about what you guys are up to at Discerning Digital is this notion of platform needs and understanding the infrastructure that goes, you know, the baseline foundations of any of these digital programs. Agile is, what is the particular interest of Agile? But then also, can you just swoop into what you're doing about, how do you evaluate infrastructure needs and so on?
Yeah, well, just to talk a little bit more about Agile, it was really the perfect way to deliver the project because, as most people will be familiar with, if they've looked into Agile, the methodology behind it is continual collaboration. Now, we needed that really as a lever to keep everybody engaged, interested, and it was a tall order because digital, to some aspects of businesses, let's be honest, most aspects, it can be quite off-putting, technical, boring. I've been in meetings with people when their eyes have glazed over, and it's hard to keep their attention.
Especially when you start talking tech, right?
Yeah, which was really important. And we've been on a journey ourselves as a consultancy to divorce ourselves from agency and tech speak, to the detriment of people wondering whether, you know, we know what we're talking about, because we talk in plain English and we don't talk in tech. But there's a reason for that, and that's because, you know, the people we're selling to and trying to work with don't understand the technical. So we want to speak in a common business tongue, I suppose.
Yeah.
And that's important as part of the transformation project we did, the initial project. That was to humanize everything. So Agile gave us the construct to deliver that by breaking everything down into small chunks, working through a logical process flow. So literally 5 different banks of work, new work that nobody's talked about yet, work that's being planned, work in progress, and then done. And then we can park the rest. So that enabled us to have to celebrate successes and also to manage all of the work.
I think just to add to that, on that particular job, the visual aspect of Agile is really important. So we physically put up storyboards onto glass panes of so that anybody could walk in, any stakeholder could walk into our office and have a conversation about any aspect of the business. That was the challenge, to create a story on every part of quite a detailed project that anybody could have a conversation about.
So you had a physical representation of what was going on as well as a digital one?
Yes.
Yeah, the day we put that up, I think the office, which is probably about 30 people in the office, probably thought we'd gone crazy. All of a sudden, the glass panes to our office became rather bright with different coloured post-it notes.
Oh, that's
but
cool.
That was the point. It was a talking point.
Yeah.
Got people thinking something big was happening, and they asked questions.
Well, it all becomes, as opposed to sort of abstract and digital, rather real and human. And so I love this. I mean, you saw maybe that project by some company is using Lego pieces to demonstrate where they are on their projects, or maybe it's a calendar or something. It's pretty cool. That's neat. So listen, when you guys are working now with your clients, mostly SMEs and so on, you go in and you do a needs assessment. Can you talk us through that process? Because that, I think that's a fundamentally underviewed, unknown area for most companies. Outside of IT.
Yeah. So we do a kind of low contact audit. So we go in and we do a quick scan. We meet with all the important stakeholders and we ask the obvious questions, which is, what are the pressure points for you at the moment? And that's across all aspects of digital. Now that's very, a big point to make here and to make it very clear, because some businesses and some clients that we work with fundamentally need to learn right from the off the difference between digital and IT. So we get very involved in explaining where the lines start and stop between digital and IT.
Well, illuminate me. Tell me, how do you distinguish between the one digital and IT?
Yeah, so digital really being front of house and everything to do with publishing and customer data, very much based on the outbound side of things. And then IT being very much back office, personnel, staff, security, permissions, computers, procurement, that kind of thing. So it gives you two very different areas there. Now, they do intertwine at points.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Of course they do. But everybody has a specialism, and ours
that's great.
Really getting companies to understand digital risk and digital opportunity associated with their digital collateral, and what we call their digital footprint, which is how big and broad they are across all different digital channels, whether that's email, social, web, search, mobile, data, that kind of thing.
All right, so you just mentioned digital risk, which is a term that really strikes an ear for me. And I'm going to imagine that the people who bring up the risk alerts are going to be the legals, the CEO perhaps, CFO. How do you approach that when you go into a company?
This is the interesting thing for us. Digital risk has come up more and more with more businesses that we deal with in very different ways. It comes up, firstly, from a financial point of view and then a reputational point of view. So in terms of financial implications, it depends on where we've come in, on the business life cycle of a business, I suppose. So an example could be risk associated with a business that has an exit plan. For example, let's say the business is looking to exit, or the stakeholders are looking to exit in 3 to 5 years. We've been brought in then to discuss customer data, compliance, and bring in the right suppliers at that point, so that because the obvious thing that their business is going to be valued on that data when they come to exit. And the same thing for somebody that has bought a business and they're looking to scale up at that point. That's where we look at it from an infrastructure point of view. Let's put the right infrastructure in that's going to last the amount of time that they're looking to, so it's scalable to a certain point. We absolutely believe in when is it good enough technology, and it will last the amount of time that it needs to last, rather than being completely bulletproof. And then, of course, there is risks associated on a more day-to-day level, associated with digital projects. I think, we come in at it from a point of view of levelling the playing field for clients when they're dealing with digital projects. So a digital project at a basic level could be a whole new website and everything else that goes with it. An example of what we might do there is that, let's say, the key stakeholder or the driver of a new website has come from the board and they've asked that to be fulfilled through the marketing department as the key stakeholder. If that's the case, the traditional way would be that they might look for a handful of suppliers to deal with that. When we look at it, we had a look at it earlier for a client, and we realised that we might engage with 10 different aspects of digital in terms of suppliers, from a development house, designers, somebody that's an expert in UX, social, PR, content, the list goes on, do site optimization, and generally don't believe that the solution is one supplier.
Yeah, I think to add to that, businesses are finding that digital is so intrinsic and important to their business really these days, that they're finding that there isn't really many one-size-fits-all agencies that can offer the breadth of everything that they need to do. Mm-hmm. So consultancies like ours are becoming more and more in need, so that we can really work
right players,
with lots of different parties.
Yeah, so how do you quantify the risk? Is there any evolution in this? Because, in the old days, we'd have a certain ability to evaluate the beta and the sort of that's financial risks associated with an activity. Are we progressing along the lines of quantifying risk and how to diminish the risk? I think this is very frontier stuff.
We do have a way of we quite simply traffic light risk. So liaising with the right partners, we bring in legal teams. Sometimes there needs to be more of a deep dive on data, just to look at things like opt-ins for data. And people are acquiring businesses and selling businesses, and you know, it was on an old kind of way of dealing online. People aren't even sure whether the data's opt-in or not. And yet they're buying businesses with the promise of 500,000 data records, and you can't actually market them. So that's a great example of where there's risk.
That's fantastic.
With a business. There's other examples. It's not just legal and data. Digital PR, allowing businesses to monitor their reputation. We set up alert services and news monitoring services so that companies know what's being said about their own brand across the web. Also, brand consistency. We work with DAM, Digital Asset Management Services. So if there's an international group who need consistency across their brand, across the globe, there's one cloud-based system they can all log into, and they can all share branded assets that are consistent. So that's another example of risk, just using the wrong logo in the wrong format in the wrong territory.
That makes loads of sense. Ian, I mean, I'm going to speak to you, but Richard, you can chime in. How do you stay up to date with, I mean, the number of new things that are coming up? You mentioned this sort of, you know, I can't remember the term you used, Richard, but enough is enough, or something that's current.
When is it good enough?
Yeah. When is it good enough was probably one of the phrases we coined through desperation, I think. And we found that it stayed with us. And it's been pivotal in everything we've done for our clients, really, because everything is based on not only the aspirations of what they want to achieve, but obviously money at the end of the day, budgets. So I think a lot of technical and IT and digital development people all get very excited about technology, capability, what can be achieved, and they forget some of the obvious things, which is how much the company is willing to spend. So it's great having enthusiasm about digital, and it's great to let our clients know that we're enthusiastic and that it's our world, but never to the detriment of pushing that over, above and beyond what they actually need or what they're willing to pay for.
Or what they're able to manage. I mean, take the example of big data, social CRM, and say, oh, that's very exciting intellectually, I get it. Let's get the next biggest database management system. Yeah, and let's have everything connected in. But they forget the mindset.
Yeah.
So just maybe as in a closing kind of way, what kind of insights would you have for someone listening, saying, listen, wow, I've never really thought about my platform requirements. Any tips or specific ideas you might have that would help them, aside from calling you, of course, that's the obvious one.
Yep.
But to figuring out this issue.
I would say, firstly, from my point of view, it's just let's continue to focus on the outcomes of it. And that's what we really want to talk about, first and foremost. What KPIs do we want to achieve? How can digital accelerate that? Always bringing it back and aligning it back to what you're trying to achieve as a business. And then we'll work backwards from there.
Yeah, and from my side, it's not to get what we call geek out. Don't geek out, get too excited about the technology, when actually you need to be practical. So Rich and I have benefited quite a lot from both having quite diverse backgrounds. We work together well because we have a constant, if you like, friction. I'm always coming from a digital, pure digital background. And Richard thinks, as he's just said, very much from a business outcomes point of view. If we wouldn't have had that that background and that relationship, I think the project would have been failed in one way or another. So great advice for companies is to find the right team and the right mix of skills to get the job done and see things from many different angles.
And just to close on that, you know, when we talk about these business needs, outcomes, I completely subscribe. And the issue then is the vision, because let's say that I get into these meetings and we start talking about the budget, and then somehow, miraculously, the conversation comes down, how can I do my quarter? Or, you know, how can I pull in this month? So what is a sort of a beautiful idea of a 3-year plan shortly ends into a discussion of how we're going to finish the month. I jest a little bit. So let's say right now people are doing 2014's budget. We can then come up with a plan. Our outcome is we need to do plus 10%, 14% more traffic, this and that, whatever those numbers might be. And then we need a platform for that. But that platform will be scaled only to achieve that outcome as opposed to the longer-term outcome. And, of course, then afterwards, well, who knows what's going to happen in 3 years. Facebook may no longer exist. So that's sort of that gap, which I was wondering, I wanted you to comment.
I'd agree. I mean, I think that they're just we definitely face those, that exact point. And my experience from dealing with the majority of boards of our clients is that they're still absolutely stuck in the quarter, and you're never too far away from that. I think it's a case of, again, we're back to practicalities, looking at short-term wins where we can show. I think accountability is really key in digital. You can start to show quite quickly whether you're making progress. Mm-hmm. And I think it's about breaking down the overall objectives of what you're trying to achieve into minute detail. So we can see that we're on the right track. We can see that we're improving. I think that's the way to do it, as transparent as possible.
Yeah, and from my side, because we do very much play with digital systems and services, don't be afraid to try tactical services. There's some great services out there at the moment that just manage landing pages and help you manage your inbound marketing that can be baked into your existing website proposition. Lots of people think we need to start literally, as I said at the beginning, baby out of the bathwater, it's all start again. And this is why this phrase that we've coined, when is it good enough, is so important. Sometimes you can't change the big things overnight. You're never going to. And yet, as you've just said, you do have immediate financial pressures and concerns. So using digital for what its strengths are now, with so many options out there on the market, is to employ the services of people who understand the different options and to use them to your advantage.
So how is it that how do you guys stay up to date? What are your favorite portals or references to stay up to date with all these changing platforms and so on? Give us some help on that.
I might just answer this one because it's a particular problem. So first of all, I get regular counseling from Richard.
That's good.
The difficult thing is...
You lie down on the couch and he tells you... Yeah, that's the good stuff.
You always feel that you're out of date. That's the difficulty in digital. And to be honest, I think people who work in the digital space are people that just love and embrace change, as you'll be all too familiar with.
Totally.
But that fear before you go to bed at midnight of thinking, if I switch Twitter off now, will I miss something that is so important? They change the course of the entire business in the face of all our clients work. It is always there. But we actually find this is what goes so direct to the practical digital transformation of what we do. We work with a network of suppliers who are all top of their game. So we don't pretend to be experts in everything. We employ and recruit the services of people who are experts. And then in getting our hands dirty in delivering projects, we learn week in, week out. And we don't feel the need to have to do geek out in search or geek out in social or be the world's best data expert, because we know those people are the end of the line that we can call. So building a really powerful network of a support group, if you like, if you have a big digital transformation project to do, building your support group, thinking about how we're going to deliver it, are all really big questions to ask right from the off.
I love it. Fantastic, guys. Richard and Ian, thanks for coming on the show. Tell us, tell listeners how they can get in touch with you. What's the best way to follow you or track you down?
Yeah, well, we're very active on Twitter. Quite proud of our Twitter account, which is Digi Coach House. Would have been Digital Coach House, but Twitter doesn't let you have enough characters. Yeah,
15 characters max.
So Digi Coach House is the place to be. And really, that's where we talk a lot about transformation in the practical side. If we're honest, we link a lot off to reputable sources, so it's not all about us.
Yeah, it's curated.
Yep.
That's brilliant. Well, of course, I'll put down your contact details in the show notes. And thanks, Richard and Ian. Appreciate you getting online this morning. Another radio show.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for having listened to this recording of the Minta Dialogue Internet Show. You'll find the show notes on themindset.com, where you can also sign up for my weekly newsletter at /subscribe. If you like the show, please rate it in iTunes, and don't forget to click the handy Facebook like button or to tweet it out. In the meantime, please come join the conversation at The Mindset or catch me on Twitter at MDIAL. Happy trails.
The Jim Stroud Podcast explores the discoveries and trends forming the future of our lives. Brain-to-brain communication, robot bosses, microchip implants for workers, and artificial intelligence replacing human workers are all happening now. If you want to know what's happening next, subscribe now to the Jim Stroud Podcast.